I'm Stephen Hundley from IUPUI, and this is Leading Improvements in Higher Education, a service of the Assessment Institute in Indianapolis. Our sponsor for this season is Watermark. This episode features two colleagues from the Association of American Colleges and Universities, Dawn Whitehead and Terry Rhodes. Dawn is Vice President in the Office of Global Citizenship for Campus, Community, and Careers. Terry is Vice President in the Office of Quality, Curriculum, and Assessment, and also serves as Executive Director of Value. We will learn more about them, their work, and the Association of American Colleges and Universities during our time together. Again, welcome to Leading Improvements in Higher Education. We are here with Dawn and Terry of the Association of American Colleges and Universities, otherwise known as AACNU. You can learn more about AACNU at their website, aacu.org. Dawn, Terry, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Well, I'm so excited to talk with both of you. I've known both of you for a long time and certainly respect the work of AACNU. And Terry, let's jump right in and learn more about the organization. What is the mission of AACNU? What audience do you serve? And if you could talk about how you became to be part of the AACNU family.
Well, great. That's a good way to start. In our most recent mission statement, we've sort of tried to succinctly indicate our mission, which is summed up as our efforts to advance the vitality and public standing of liberal education by making quality and equity the foundations for excellence in undergraduate education in service to democracy. Our audience, as a result of that mission, encompasses one of the broadest audiences, perhaps, among higher education associations of all types and sectors of higher education, from presidents to other administrative and student affairs staff, to students and to faculty at all types and varieties of higher education institutions, both domestic and abroad. And I got engaged with AACNU initially from going to a conference that AACNU had sponsored, but then had the opportunity to be on a campus as a faculty member and administrator for a sponsored program that AACNU, a funded program that they had and were conducting with a variety of different institutions across the country. And out of that experience, got more engaged and more involved through the various opportunities that AACNU has to engage in that work and to not only to do that on my own campus, but was invited to join the faculty of a summer institute. And then eventually a position was advertised and I applied and was hired at AACNU. So it was a multifaceted over several years engagement.
Lots of us had exposure to AACNU through a summer institute or one of the annual meetings or the various engagements. Dawn, how did you become involved with AACNU and what have you observed as some of the changes of the association over the past several years?
Well, Stephen, you hit it on the head when you mentioned institutes, conferences, annual meetings. That's really how I became involved with AACNU. Was participating in the annual meeting. Also, when one of the early conferences associated with global learning, and then of course, having previously been at IUPUI, a lot of the work that we were doing at IUPUI while I was there was related to the work that AACNU had done on the essential learning outcomes, other reform of higher education. But I think the biggest place that I was really able to get involved was when it came to the value rubrics. And while I was leading a summer global service learning program in Ghana, a couple of months before, we got information that AACNU wanted folks to pilot the global learning rubric. And it was just a wonderful tool to use to assess some of the student learning for my program and some of our broader service learning programs, in particular global service learning programs at IUPUI. And so that was when I sort of said, oh my gosh, so much of what I'm doing comes from AACNU.
We're going to talk about the value rubrics coming up, but let me just, for the sake of comprehensiveness here, VALUE is an acronym, and Terry, help me out. Valid Assessment of Learning in Undergraduate Education?
Exactly.
Okay. So the value rubrics, we'll talk about those in just a minute, but I want to first come, Terry, to the tagline on the AACNU website. It says, and I quote, that AACNU serves as a voice and a force for liberal education, a voice and a force for liberal education. What does that mean, and why is this significant for higher education today?
Well, I think it's particularly appropriate now, although we believe it's been significant in a model of how we should be approaching higher education for a long, long time. But I think particularly appropriate now in that liberal education really is focused on trying to provide a quality education for every student who wishes to attend higher education, regardless of the door or the avenue that they take to come into higher education, right out of high school, as a returning adult, as a transfer student from a two-year to a four-year, and regardless of the type of institution, our students deserve an education that prepares them to function in a society where change is the constant, and rapid change, and the confronting of all aspects of our lives with really difficult, complex, challenging issues in situations. And the simple solutions, the formulas that underlie a lot of our education, the patterns in which we've made decisions in the past, often are not easily and rapidly adaptable to these new, constantly changing circumstances. And so liberal education is about how can we take the learning that is essential in terms of knowledge and that type of thing that in today's world is at our fingertips. I recall as a faculty member in the classroom that increasingly as my career went along, students were able to answer my question almost before I could get it out of my mouth by virtue of the technology that was available and their access to it. And so information is something that we're drowning in, that it's so readily available that if we spend all of our time just teaching content and knowledge, we are missing the opportunities that we have with our students in our high-touch experiences, whether it's in a classroom or in a remote environment now, to help them know and develop the abilities to know what to do with that knowledge, how to take it and apply it in new and different situations, how to move from a more descriptive, simplistic recognition of knowledge and math and competence in it to how to use it in a new situation, transfer it to a unscripted problem, et cetera. And that is partly a science. It's partly a knowledge-based kind of understanding, but it's also an art and an ability to be able to see how something that I know and can do can transfer and be helpful in really different settings to be adaptable. And now more than ever, the knowledge is there, it's available, but we just have to help our students be much better at assessing that information. When is it useful? When isn't it? What is evidence I can trust and have confidence in? And what is really specious and subject to lack of evidence behind it and proof and substance? And we are indeed confronted with that now, not just in an economic sense, but in a sense that threatens, I think, democracy through the civil discussion of different views and working through those to find commonality and purpose that benefits all of our people, all of our students, the world over. So anyway, I'm now getting rhapsodic, I guess, but it's really significant now more than ever that we've shifted our focus.
Preparing students and equipping them with the capabilities to solve life's unscripted problems, certainly a mantra of AACNU and a lot of the programming and work you do there. Dawn, coming to you, you have a portfolio of responsibility that's rather broad, but one area that is key among those sets of responsibilities focuses on integrative global learning. What are some of the strategies and approaches you and your colleagues at AACNU and elsewhere are taking to this work? How are institutions helping students become global-minded and globally competent in the work that they do?
You know, I jokingly, well, half jokingly, like to say to my colleagues that I really believe that global learning is one of the most robust forms of liberal education. As Terry alluded to, the power of liberal education to have students put front and center in those unscripted challenges, to have students think about things from multiple disciplinary perspectives. And that's indeed what global learning is and what global learning does. And the way we approach it at AACNU is that it is truly integrative across curriculum, across majors, across the co-curriculum. So students should have multiple opportunities to engage in different dimensions of global learning, from perspective taking to understanding global systems and the complexity to understanding cultural diversity in a way in which they may not have approached it. And we have looked at doing this, from general education all the way through the majors. Some of the early work that was done at AACNU through the Shared Futures Initiative, initially they did think, the majors is where to go. And they found very quickly, there's not enough time. We've got to start with general education. And it has to be something that is a through line throughout a student's educational experience. So we have worked with a number of institutions to look at identifying their broad student learning outcomes and embedding global learning in those student learning outcomes. Other institutions have looked at developing specific global learning outcomes that you can lay across any discipline, any department, any school, where students have opportunities to engage in, work, as I said before, working across difference, working using problems and using solutions that are found in different parts of the world, different regions, different parts of the country. And I think the other big thing about the work that we've done with global learning is how global learning, while it is a high impact practice in and of itself, it can be connected to other high impact practices, from community-based learning to internships, to diversity, to thematic reading and thematic work. And I think that's where we've seen a lot of improvement and engagement of global learning becoming more than just a part of the mission statement, but actually becoming a living, breathing part of the work that students are doing. And the last thing I'd say that's absolutely critical for global learning and how institutions are doing this is they're making connections to both the community and to careers. So they're making a clear case for students to understand that employers value global learning. Employers want students who are able to solve problems with people who come from different backgrounds. They could be different cultural backgrounds, different ethnic backgrounds, different educational backgrounds, but they want students who are able to come in and say, oh yes, I've already done that. I know how to solve problems with people who are different, not I'm coming in and hoping to do that. In the same breath, they always also want students who've had experience working with people from different parts of the world. And even though right now we're experiencing limited mobility, there is so much diversity in communities surrounding many of our colleges and universities. Students are able to have a global experience sometimes without ever leaving the country. And it's all about that framing. So that those are a few of the ways that we have been engaging institutions and the strategies that we've been using to spread the gospel, if you will, of global learning.
So a focus on global learning early and often and inclusive across the entire campus, not just relegated to one course, one experience, but truly frequent and integrated.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Terry Dawn was mentioning global learning is one of 16 different value rubrics. We were mentioning the value rubrics earlier. Talk about AACNU's efforts related to value and to general education. What do we mean by value and how does that contribute to student learning? And then I'll come back and talk as a follow-up about some trends you're seeing in general education. But first, let's begin with value.
Great. Thank you. Yes, the value, as you were right on in being able to recall this, AACNU, just an acronym now, lives in the area of Washington, D.C., the land of the acronym. When we were developing these, value became an acronym, and it is the Valid Assessment of Learning in Undergraduate Education. Our association is focused primarily on undergraduate education as the most pervasive form of higher education in this country and around the world. But it evolved at a time when higher education, for the most part, relied upon standardized, multiple choice, short answer, fill in the blank kinds of questions to test the quality of the learning that was going on our campuses. And since we have been talking about liberal education, and as Dawn has said, and you have also indicated, liberal education is something that tries to focus much more broadly on the education that our students are experiencing and need to experience in higher education, that takes it beyond the trivial, the foundational, and moves it into more complex, that takes general education and looks at it and examines it in relation to and in the context of majors, et cetera, the co-curriculum as well as the curriculum. And so we said we need assessment tools, something that will allow us to talk across different disciplines, across different kinds of institutions and majors, around the learning that's taking place both within the formal academy and outside of it, that helps our students and our faculty and our institutions to integrate these learning experiences, and at the same time helps and equips our students with a set of tools and language that help them do this integration across these divergent learning environments to bridge those, but also to bring some unity and some coherence to them, recognizing that everyone who comes to our institutions, whether they are faculty, whether they are other professional educators, whether they are the folks who are on our campuses supplying auxiliary services, or if they're people in the community that we're interacting, our students come bringing things with them. They bring their lived lives up into those points when they make contact with us. And that is part of the integrative process that needs to happen as well. Everything we know from educational research is that if we can start with what people bring with them to us, that it gives a foundation to build upon, to stretch and open windows and horizons for continuous learning moving forward. And so we didn't sit in a room and develop the rubrics. Indeed, we drew upon, as Dawn had referenced, what employers have been saying for decades they want to see in our graduates, what most every study has come back with and said, these things are essential, regardless of your major, regardless of your type of institution. And we engaged faculty and we engaged student affairs professionals in helping us put together descriptions of what these learning outcomes were. You mentioned 16. Those were ones that came out of work that AACNU had done over decades with students, faculty, and employers, other educators, as these things were always being mentioned as what was being looked for in the learning of our students as they progressed through our educational programs. And what our teams of faculty from all these different institutional types, backgrounds, majors, emphases did is that they went through what was already developed and out there in terms of the learning that they were looking for in their own context. And we brought together and lifted up the things that seemed to be most often shared, that people said, regardless of the peculiarities or nuance of my area, we always look for these things. And so we also then said, and again, we don't want this to be a one-off, because one of the things we know is that our more complex, sophisticated learning doesn't happen from taking a single course, having a single assignment, or having done well on a single test. We get good at something, we get proficient in it, we master it through constant iterative practice. And as Dawn was illustrating, that's what the value rubrics attempted to do, to develop something that where we had a shared language, a shared set of very general but shared expectations of what the learning looked like, that moved from a more introductory level engagement with that learning outcome to a more sophisticated and complex demonstration of it, always focused on demonstrating in a multitude of contexts and media how the student showed a level of learning around those outcomes. And so that was what we did. And it was a language that we wanted faculty and institutions to be able to share across their divergences, but also for students to have a vocabulary and us to articulate to them, this is the kind of learning we're looking for, so that they too could engage in knowing and judging their own levels of learning in a way that grades have not consistently allowed them to do that. So they could make better judgments about their own levels of learning. And when they do that, they're also much better equipped to seek out additional learning opportunities that help advance that learning even farther.
So we're talking about the value rubrics. These were collaboratively developed and they are adaptable to a variety of disciplines and contexts. And if you'd like to learn more for our listeners, I invite you to visit aacu.org and you can find the value rubrics there and can download and adapt them to your local context. And Terry, a follow-up question. I'm looking at the list of the value rubrics and what jumps out at me are topics such as critical thinking, written communication, oral communication, quantitative literacy. You mentioned the importance of the foundational or introductory learning for students. And a lot of that often takes place in general education. Talk about some of the trends in general education programs that you're noticing.
Well, what we're finding, and again, a lot of this comes from our constant interaction and requests for feedback from individuals, programs, and institutions that are using value rubrics and that are interested in measuring the learning outcomes that you've mentioned. That again, we don't consider these to be comprehensive or the list, but rather these are central things that are and have been consistently desired over decades and decades of time. There are others that will come and some that may disappear, but it's that the menu of taking courses from column A, column B, column C doesn't allow our students to develop the in-depth growth approach to their learning. It's a one-off thing and then you move to the next. And so what we're hearing from folks is that the rubrics help integrate the learning. You can still take a variety of courses in a variety of disciplines, but the focus needs to be not solely on the mastery or learning of a particular content or focus of that, but how does it integrate? How does it fit? How does it help you in other areas of essential learning, other knowledge areas? As I mentioned, the science and the art of higher education, how do those fit together and how do those help students expand and enhance their learning over time and over situations and problems. How do you connect your learning in higher education to what's happening in your own communities, what's happening in communities around the world? We live in a digital world, heavily digital influenced world, that we cannot escape our global positioning. We cannot escape and ignore what's happening in other places, in other contexts. And so those are the trends we're seeing, is that general education is not just a one-off introduction to, but rather general education is something that is now continuing across an educational pathways. Not all of general education is now a 100, 200, 1,000, 2,000 level course. General education courses are emerging at the junior, the senior level, that they're setting people up for graduate education, that having one from column A, B, C, and D is no longer adequate unless those are also linked together, tied together in some way or another around these learning outcomes that span disciplinary knowledge content areas, but help our students make linkages, make transference as they move through their own pathways and careers in and out of higher education, in one career into the next career. We no longer prepare our students for a lifetime career, but rather for a career that is going to be changing and evolving over time.
AACNU has always been a leader in addressing diversity, equity, and inclusion in higher education. Dawn, what are some of the approaches the association is taking to continue to advance these goals?
Yeah, I think one of the big things is, you know, the clear value of equity, as Terry mentioned earlier when you talked about our mission, is we truly believe that equity is one of the foundations of higher education. And, you know, by saying it and by making sure that we are embedding equity in all the work that we do. So it's not something that just resides in our Office of Diversity, Equity, and Student Success. It's something that you find in my office. When you're thinking about global citizenship, it resides in Terry's office. When you think about quality curriculum assessment, and it resides in our STEM office. So I think we've been able to take the lead because when we are partnering with our member institutions, they also know this value of equity in the work that we're doing. And they know that it's definitely going to be part of the framing for the projects that we're engaged with. You know, one thing obviously is that, you know, we have indeed taken on an equity mindset. And so we are working with our colleagues on campuses to think about what does an equity mindset mean? You know, are you looking at setting equity goals for your programs and your projects? So for example, when I'm working with institutions that are looking at developing and working on global learning activities, what are the equity goals within this? So if you're looking at who is participating, let's say, in particular programs or taking courses that have a global focus before you're able to embed it throughout, you know, who's missing? Who's not there? What are some of the barriers? How can we make sure that all students have an opportunity? One of the things that often comes up when you talk about global learning is the most prominent practice from the perception of many people is education abroad. And when we look at education abroad and say, okay, nationally, 1 in 10 students have an opportunity to participate in this. Okay, so there's an equity issue. And if we aren't going to be able to have the 90% do this, how can we find ways for students to have meaningful ways to engage in global learning? I think we also see the same thing when I talk to our colleagues in our STEM office, and they're working very hard to create equitable pipelines of STEM educators who see the value, who are diverse, and creating environments for success for all students. So I think that because we have really centered equity in the work that we're doing, that helps us and positions the institutions that work with us to reframe and to think about things from that perspective, regardless of what the area is. So it's no longer just the responsibility of that person who may be working in the inclusion space, but it's something that everyone must consider. So I think that is one thing that we've been successful. And I think the other thing is that our member institutions want this, you know, and so they're asking us, what do we do now? you know, especially with what is happening in cries and calls for racial justice across the country, we're having more and more people who are asking us, what do we need to do? How can we address this in higher education? As Terry talked about earlier, we have to prepare students for what's happening outside the campuses. Our students live in this world. It's not the so the real world that they're going to go into. They're living and working and thriving, it, we hope, in the real world now, and we have to prepare them. So I think that's one other thing that has been important. And then I must mention our Truth, Racial Healing, and Transformation Initiative. And that's something that we've seen a great deal of interest from institutions. Again, as Terry echoed, Terry mentioned earlier, institutions from a variety of types. Those institutions had to have a strong connection and commitment with their communities. So again, this is a project that's not just about the university, but it's about that campus community partnership, you know, rooted and centered on equity. So I think those are some of the approaches that we're taking. And I think they're approaches that our member institutions want from us.
How are AACNU member institutions responding to the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic? Terry, what are you hearing from colleagues and from member institutions?
Well, I've been really impressed with what we're hearing from our member institutions and others as well. When the pandemic really hit us in the spring, and we started off thinking this is going to be a spring like every other spring, and then it had a huge, huge pivot that needed to take place as we had to move to a remote learning environments. And institutions did. They took a brief pause most of the time, but then indeed stepped up and said, we're going to figure out how we can help manage this so that our students are not left hanging, and provided the kinds of support and things to a whole set of students and faculty who did not have a lot of experience doing a mediated learning kind of instruction in learning environment. And so what was done in a sort of an emergency context in the spring to allow students to not lose credit, not lose learning, and institutions to be able to fulfill their promises to students has continued, I think, over the summer in many, if not most, institutions to continue to prepare us for the possibility that remote learning was going to be the dominant mode going forward. And so I think, you know, what we've been able to do, confronting, again, long-standing set of most of our faculty who didn't do much in an online environment, having to continue to develop their courses to do that, and our students to not lose their opportunities for education, who also were not used to dealing in that environment in a higher education context. So I think the actual response to it has been really quite good for higher education and our members in particular. But more importantly, I think what it has done is exactly some of what Dawn was talking about in terms of equity, is that it has surfaced in many, many ways the inequities of providing education for our students. The large number of students who simply don't have access to reliable internet connections, to being able to have the access to digital and learning environments, a simple place to go and study, to focus their attention. They don't have places to engage in learning. The challenges of having to work, and when not working, to live and still pursue an education. And again, most of our member institutions do indeed report to us that they are taking all kinds of efforts and connections to their communities that they're living in. The TRHT work, although not focused specifically on pandemic response, have been illustrating the ways in which higher education institutions have been connecting with their communities to help provide the support to be able to allow all of our students to pursue a higher education. And also then beginning to recognize that this kind of unscripted problem is something that we have to be able to respond to. It's going to continue to happen in different ways and unexpected ways. That's the whole point of an unscripted, complex kind of problem. It is new. And so we're actually highlighting the things that a liberal education says we need to be doing. And what we're hoping is that the kinds of resources that we have been championing and talking about for years are helping our faculty find things that they can utilize to help both deliver their courses, deliver the learning, to engage with their students in furthering their education and trying to solve those problems that higher education wasn't paying attention to help into the future, even if we were all back on campus in person full time, that we're not going to be ignorant or able to ignore those challenges that so many of our students, so many of our faculty and educators are confronting, having to find the ways to school our children, to handle childcare, to have a place to live and to prosper. Those aren't going to go away. They didn't go away. They existed before the pandemic. And now this has heightened it and heightened the importance of what we have termed high impact practices that allow us to actually learn and test out our learning around essential outcomes, around issues of equity and access and quality, so that we can achieve liberal education for all of our students. Because our society and the world is saying in real stark terms, this is critical. This is critical now. We can't avoid it. And we're not going to be able to because we can't ignore it now in a way that we didn't before the pandemic.
In both of your recent answers, you mentioned the Truth, Racial Healing and Transformation Initiative, or TRHT, one of many initiatives and convenings that AACNU is involved in on an annual basis. This includes, of course, your annual meeting, many conferences, and several summer institutes. Dawn, what are some of the themes and trends you're noticing from all of the different AACNU meetings, both recent and forthcoming?
Yeah, thank you for that, Stephen. That's I think one of the things that Terry sort of touched on was, you know, going about doing the work that institutions have been doing, so be it general education, integrative learning, high impact practices from the perspective of our summer institutes. How do you do those in a remote environment? So we proceeded and had our summer institutes. They were just done in a virtual format. And many of the faculty who engaged in this were looking at how do you do high impact practices in an environment in which students may not be able to leave their homes? Or how are you doing community-based learning when your students may not have a direct line to the community or they cannot go into the community? So I think some of the things are, how do we respond to what's going on right now? One other example, I'll give you two other quick examples. One, we have our upcoming global conference in October, the 8th through the 10th, and it's focused on lessons from global learning on higher education's response to the global crisis. And so as you might imagine in the field, there have been a lot of concerns since early March when there was a halt to mobility, but also a halt to engagement locally. And so one thing that's come up is we've had a lot of folks who have been doing work over the past few years on COIL, or collaborative online international learning. Some have done virtual learning, remote learning. And so there's a lot that people in the field of global learning have to offer their own institutions and others in terms of how do you have meaningful interaction among students when they may never have an opportunity to work together in person. But we have some really strong examples of students who have been working with students in Indonesia or students in Kenya or other parts of the world where the students have come together to do some really powerful assignments, develop some powerful ideas and practices. So for our upcoming global conference, there'll be a lot of conversation about how are we able to still require field-based experiences in fields such as global health or in education? How do we maintain a practica when students can't physically go out? So I think that's one thing. The other that I'll just mention briefly is, of course, our annual meeting. And the theme of our annual meeting is revolutionizing higher education after COVID-19. And Terry touched on one of the powerful points, which is we knew these persistent inequities were there, but we had not addressed some of these issues in a meaningful way. And what COVID-19 and what the cries for racial justice have shown us is that, yes, we have to respond in higher education, and now is the time. And we have an amazing opportunity to really revolutionize what we're doing in higher education to make sure that we are offering opportunities for all students. And how are we doing that? And so we're really looking forward to bringing together institutional leaders to share what practices are they changing? What innovations have they implemented? And how is it that they're engaging students in these times that, you know, we're so tired of hearing people say in these unprecedented times, but they really are? And what kind of change is really occurring to make sure that we have these new models that we need to meet this moment and to meet the future and to meet the students of today and the students of tomorrow? So we're really looking forward to individuals sharing those practices. And you know, I've just been going through the proposals for the annual meeting, and there are a lot of really innovative practices going on. And I look forward to that convening where we can have these conversations and we can learn from each other to make sure that we are doing the most to make sure all students have an opportunity to really thrive at our institutions.
You both have been addressing trends and themes you're observing in the work that you do at AAC&U. I'd like to look ahead, and Dawn, we'll come to you first for this. Looking ahead over the next 3 to 5 years, what are some additional trends that you see, and how is AAC&U prepared to address those trends?
I think one trend that I see coming up is greater collaboration. And at AAC&U, we're a little bit ahead of the game because, as we both noted, we already bring together people from, you know, highly selective to open access to 2 and 4 year to, you know, predominantly white institutions, historically Black colleges, universities. But I think we're going to see how important it is that we actually collaborate. We're already seeing that a bit with what's happening in terms of reopening and what's going to occur. And I think that type of collaboration is going to be a trend that we see continue to grow. And how do institutions collaborate in ways that help everyone? And it's not just one institution, you know, that sort of benefits by saying, oh, we'll help you out. But no, how do you truly create collaborative models for institutions across systems that may have seemingly few connections? So I think that's a big trend. The other trend I think, and this is in that same spirit, is, you know, the importance and the continued development of transfer pathways for students. You know, we aren't quite out of this, as you know, COVID-19, and we're seeing more and more students who want that flexibility to transfer. They can't go back. I have a nephew who's an out-of-state student, and I know for a minute the family was thinking, well, wouldn't it be nice if he just stayed in state for this semester until we could see what would happen? So I think we're going to see, you know, greater models and practices, and I think we can draw on the good work we've seen IUPUI and Ivy Tech has done and some other institutions that we've worked with. But those are two trends that I think we're just going to continue to see growing. And as institutions, it's going to be important that we figure out those pathways.
Collaboration and transfer pathways are two trends Dawn has identified. Terry, same question to you. What do you see, and how is AAC&U prepared to address those trends?
I'll add a couple things to that. One is, quite frankly, one of the trends is going to be survival. I mean, we've already seen in the recent months and year institutions that have failed, institutions who have merged with another institution, not just from a financial, but at a real dollar and cents level. Institutional survival is going to be a key trend. And part of that survival is going to be, how do we continue to attract, as Dawn was saying, students, regardless of whether they're traditional or non-traditional in our language of higher ed categories, but how do we engage people to want to come to higher education and see its value? Pun partially intended. And to do that, they're going to have to innovate. They're going to have to see what we're going through and have been going through these months as an opportunity. And that's one of the things that AACNU has consistently tried to do during this time period, is let's see what the opportunities are here for us to indeed try to achieve, recognize and achieve what the potential is of our students, et cetera. So that's one thing, is that survival is going to be something that is a motivator for institutions going forward that will, I think, open up opportunities for us to decouple from some of the patterns of our behaviors and organizations and systems in the past. It also brings with it another opportunity, which is, as Dawn said, collaboration, a collaboration that also includes more our students. And I know so many of my colleagues have said, yeah, but our students are students. You know, they don't know. They don't have this experience. They don't have XYZ. But the thing is, what students do bring is indeed a reservoir of knowledge and skills that they have attained. That is what we need to build on. And we have to listen to our students to be able to be responsive to those systemic barriers, to try to put in place systemic opportunities that allow them to continue to pursue the kind of education opportunities that they deserve and that our society and our country needs and the world needs. And so listening and involving our students through the collaborative practices that bring them into, not with all the answers, but with a whole set of resources that we can draw upon, build upon, that allow us to really expand in the flourishing of their learning. But there's also a big threat that is coming along with this, which is a reductionist kind of thing, that we want to reduce post-secondary learning to a set of modules and one-off types of things that are focused on the immediate. And again, I'm not dismissing those. Yes, to get ahead in a career, to be able to transition to something new, to better yourself, certain types of learning are indeed necessary to have a certificate, to have an acknowledgement of knowledge and skill and ability in a certain focused area. But the challenge here is that higher education needs to push back and say that is an adequate thing. It is something that is a necessity, but we are shortchanging our students if we do not insist upon a liberal education. Liberal education is not the purview and the domain of exclusive liberal arts colleges. These are the essential learning outcomes that we've been talking about that are required and necessary for success in democracy, in economy, in civic life, for personal and individual success. And if we do not push back and insist that liberal education, the complex, sophisticated abilities to continue our learning at more sophisticated levels, we are really doing a disservice to our students, and we're doing a disservice to the higher education calling that is what attracted all of us to what we're doing now.
As we draw our time together to a close, I'd like to ask each of you to offer a brief, very brief final thought to our listeners. Terry, we'll start with you.
Persist, innovate, use the tools we have to allow for exciting, engaged learning for all of our students, our faculty, our educators, and our communities.
Dawn, a final thought from you.
Yeah, thank you. I just encourage everyone to remember your original, or maybe the purpose that you have now, but remember what your purpose was and that passion that drew you to that purpose, and be willing to make changes. I feel like we are really we're really at a moment where we can really change higher education for the better. And I think if we all can go back to what that original purpose was, what that passion we had, and how we can make higher education better for all students, we can really see that revolution that we need in higher education.
We've been speaking with Dawn Whitehead and Terry Rhodes of the Association of American Colleges and Universities. You can find out more about their work at aacu.org. Terry, Dawn, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks to all of your listeners.
This has been Leading Improvements in Higher Education. Our sponsor for this season is Watermark. Learn more at watermarkinsights.com. This podcast is a service of the Assessment Institute in Indianapolis, and you can learn more at our website, assessmentinstitute.iupui.edu, where you can also access other episodes. Our producers are Chad Beckner, Caleb Keith, and Shirley Yorger, with original music composed by Caleb Keith. If you like our podcast, please spread the word and encourage others to give us a listen. We appreciate your support. I'm Stephen Hundley from IUPUI, inviting you to join us again for Leading Improvements in Higher Education.